Welcome, I'm Renee Kemp, and this is Your Call. Organic food is big business. The U.S. organic market now accounts for more than $40 billion in annual sales, and it includes products that are imported from about 100 countries. But how do we determine what is organic? The U.S. Department of Agriculture adopted organic standards back in 2000, but it turns out there are some problems. One major problem is that the federal government allows farmers to hire and pay their own inspectors to certify them as USDA organic. And as this industry explodes, some mega farms seem to be taking advantage of that lax enforcement. Today, we're going to hear about some recent investigations into abuse of the organic labeling system. And as these scandals come to light, they could potentially damage your idea of just what organic food is and your confidence in that labeling system. And it could potentially threaten the very existence of some small organic farmers who are actually doing everything right. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Washington Post reporter Peter Wariski. He's written several articles in the past few months revealing problems with the USDA's organic certification program. He wrote an article last week in which he found a farm that housed close to 2 million chickens. At that farm, it turned out that every three hens had less than 3 feet of floor space, not the conditions we like to associate with organic. It's certainly not in line with the organic program's intent, and he's done a lot of research into just exactly what's happening with the organic certification program. Welcome to the show, Peter Wariski.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Joining us in studio is Paige Tomaselli. She's senior attorney with the Center for Food Safety. She practices environmental and administrative law with an eye toward preventing harmful food production practices, things such as pesticide use and the use of genetically modified crops. And she has certainly exposed many of the ills of the factory farming industry. Paige Tomaselli, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, indeed. Peter, let's start with you. You've written several pieces in the Post delving into the issues, but let's start by identifying what the technical definition of the word organic is.
The USDA has definitions in their rules and regulations that are based largely on a group, an advisory group, the National Organic Standards Board. It has the things that consumers might expect regarding animal welfare, not using antibiotics, not using a lot of synthetic chemicals. And those are then, imposed on anyone who wants to sell their products as USDA organic has to abide by those rules.
Is there something particularly nebulous about the definition that leaves room for people to do some of the things that you found that they're doing?
To me, the definitions are not nebulous. For example, we found in a story we wrote last week that I think it is the largest organic egg producer in the country, doesn't let the chickens outside. They're kept in a barn at 3 foot per square foot of floor space. And I don't think very many consumers would consider that consonant with their own ideas of organic agriculture. And the rules, in fact, say organic farms have to let the animals outside. They have to have, quote, outdoor access. So it doesn't seem very nebulous to me, but there are those within the industry who argue we put some screens up on the side of our barn, and we call that area the porch, and the porch they're claiming is outdoors, even though the animal doesn't get outside to fresh air or soil or any of the things that animals might be used to, or what an animal would consider outdoors.
Well, let's stay with that just for a second. You've written several pieces in the Washington Post that delved into several different foods labeled organic, everything from milk to soybeans, and most recently, the chickens that you talked about. The first piece was an investigation into the Aurora Organic Dairy in Greeley, Colorado, one of the largest in the country, as a matter of fact. Can you talk about how you went about that and exactly what you found?
We were interested in reports that we'd seen that there were a lot of large organic dairies that weren't following the law, and which says that during the grazing season, an organic cow is supposed to graze. It's natural behavior. Organic rules are supposed to encourage natural behavior. So I went out to Texas and New Mexico and found a bunch of these organic dairies, and indeed none of the cows were out, and they were in feedlots. But the editors wanted a little bit more. So we went out to Aurora and visited 8 or 9 times, and then we got samples of Aurora milk. You can tell if it's coming from Aurora because, you know, those codes that are on milk cartons, that'll tell you where the milk was processed. So anyway, we could tell that there were Costco milk or Walmart milk that came from Aurora, and then we did tests on it that show that it was not very much like grass-fed milk at all, or and other organic milks tested, some of them very, very well. The Aurora milk tested similar to conventional milk.
And the same farm was found to be in willful violation before, wasn't it? So how were they allowed to keep operating?
I'd love to have a really clear explanation from the USDA on that. The reason that they've come out with is that they settled it. They thought they'd corrected the problem 10 years ago. But it recurred. And maybe the most frustrating thing, I think, for some consumers would be the fact that their inspectors who came from the state of from Colorado, Department of Agriculture, they didn't even go out to the farm during grazing season to tell. So they couldn't even know, really, whether or not those cows were being grazed.
Paige Tomaselli, you're an attorney for the Center for Food Safety. Something tells me none of this takes you by surprise. It seems just scandalous that these conditions could exist and that they would already be found to be in violation and yet continuing to operate. I take it that this is not terribly unusual.
It's not terribly unusual, but there are several bad actors in the organic community. Most farmers are good, and they follow the organic rules, and they even go above and beyond. It's important to most farmers to do things like allow their animals to have access to pasture, allow their animals the ability to engage in their natural behaviors. These things are important to those farmers. But these bad actors, like Aurora Dairy and some of these egg productions, they're most interested in the bottom line. And so they do the bare minimum or even less than the organic rules require, and they try to get away with that. The other people who have responsibility here are, of course, the National Organic Program, who can enforce all of these regulations, and the certifiers, who, as Peter said, have the responsibility and the duty to inspect at times where the animals are supposed to be engaging in the requirements that are listed in the rules. And they just fundamentally are not complying with that duty.
Peter Wolryski and his colleagues at the Washington Post conducted the most basic investigation. They went there and found that the animals weren't outside. I mean, that's not hard to oversee. So is the problem that it's just not being overseen properly?
The problem is that the USDA, even when they have reports of failures by certain farms, are not going out and conducting investigations of those certifiers and of those farms. They have the ultimate responsibility to ensure that all farmers are complying with the organic rules, and they are not complying with that responsibility.
And they're not being punished, obviously.
That's correct.
Enough to curtail the behavior anyway.
Exactly. And so at the end of the day, it is all relying on the National Organic Program to ensure that the certifiers are doing their jobs and that the farms are doing their jobs. And the NOP's ultimate responsibility is to accredit certifiers. So they can determine whether or not a certifier is doing their job. And if the certifier is not doing their job, they can take away their accreditation. They can tell the certifier that they can't operate anymore. But NOP is not doing that.
Well, certainly those of us who go to the grocery store or to the farmer's market and see the organic label think that it means something. And so what we want to try to clear up today is, does it really mean what it says? And your agency, the Center for Food Safety, is all about consumer protection. So let's find out what folks are thinking about what they find labeled organic. We want to invite your calls. Do you eat organic food? And if so, just how confident are you that you know where it's coming from, and is it really organic? And how much do you know about the origin of your food in general and where it came from and the conditions of the animals that are perhaps producing it? And for those of you who don't buy organic, why don't you? And will hearing about scandals even influence your decision when you get to the grocery store? Give us a call, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Maybe you're a farmer or a grocer. Has the organic industry changed over the past 5 to 10 years? And has the presence of the huge companies in agribusiness affected the market? You can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. Peter, let's go back to you. Once again, you've done a lot of research into this. Is there something that really you felt was just the ultimate scandal based on what you have found in your research?
I mean, the one we haven't talked about is the millions of pounds of corn and soybeans coming in from overseas that quite obviously you could tell from the price they were, it was just regular conventional organic corn, or regular conventional corn, conventional soybeans. They came from Ukraine, they came from Romania, they sailed through Turkey, then they came to Stockton, California, and other ports in the United States. And between Europe and the United States, those conventional corn and soybean shipments became organic, which meant a huge windfall for whoever did that, because they're worth millions of dollars more. And then they were, you know, off, millions of pounds were offloaded here in the United States as organic, even though the shipping records, which we got a hold of, showed that they had been sprayed with a pesticide en route.
So again, in this piece, you were able to track a shipment of soybeans from Ukraine to Turkey, and it ultimately that shipment ended up in California, and somehow that got labeled USDA organic somewhere along that route. So do we know how it got that designation?
No. I mean, I don't know. It's clear to me that because I got price receipts, and which showed that they were being sold at conventional prices, and then somewhere in, during the transit, they were being sold at organic prices. And so we know that there was some sort of transition. Somebody slapped the label on them, but I don't know who it is. And I don't know whether USDA will know or ever know, and whether they'll be able to fine anybody or, I mean, this is a multi-million dollar fraud. And you would think there would be somebody trying to figure out an answer to your question, but I'm not sure they're going to get there or if they're even trying.
That really sounds concerning, Paige. I mean, if the USDA doesn't know, how's a consumer supposed to know?
Absolutely. Well, the NOP, the National Organic Program in the USDA, is a slow and ineffective response to investigations like this. For example, U.S. organic grain farmers have been filing complaints with USDA for years about the artificially low prices of imported grain, and USDA has done nothing about it. The consumer, you know, is at the mercy of the USDA, and the consumer wants to believe that that USDA organic label that it sees when it goes into the store actually means something.
Yeah, we do.
And it does to a certain extent. There are a number of really good farmers out there that are doing the right thing. And then there's these bad actors, as I mentioned before. Then I want you know, to put out there that the consumer should believe in the organic program because it is by far the best program that exists out there. It's the consumer should have trust in the organic program, but USDA needs to clean up its act and make sure that everybody is complying with the rules.
Speaking of consumers, let's go to a caller, Craig in Palo Alto. Welcome.
Hello. A couple of things. One, this is not exactly the reason I called, but it seems to me that once again, it's unfortunate that the government that's supposed to be protecting people seems to be falling down on the job, if you will, in terms of trying to enforce even the regulations that exist. The real reason I called, though, is because in listening to this, what I tried to do, since even on limited resources, is to see if I can get organic produce. And, so I looked into the egg issue out here in California, where I live in Northern California. And unfortunately, when I contacted one of the larger egg producers, they indicated that it's on their packaging that it's organic, pasture-raised, et cetera, et cetera. But you call up and you find out that when you talk to them, 80% of the feed, if not a higher percentage, is, I mean, that the chickens feed on is grain. And you try to get information about this out of the farms, and it's really not that easy to find out. So when they put these things on labels like pasture-raised, cage-free, you think they're just roaming around out there eating insects or whatever chickens eat, and that I was really surprised to hear that that's the case, that they're fed. That really skews a lot of the nutritional value of an egg in terms of the omega-6 and omega-3s, and not to get into the woods. But I think it's just, you know, if you want to really find out what's going on, you almost have to conduct the research on your own. If you're lucky, maybe you'll be able to find out. So I think there's even small-scale people, and I hate to say it, even at the farmers markets, where unless you're willing to follow up, you really don't have a clear answer about what you're getting.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Paige, I'm assuming that you have a better shot at knowing the source of your food and how it was raised. If you do shop at sort of local markets, you know it's probably something that's been produced within a small radius of where you live. Is that a good gauge for whether the conditions are likely to be healthy and organic, more so than, say, going to the grocery store?
I definitely think if you shop at the farmer's market and you talk to your farmer about their practices, that's the best idea you're going to get about what the quality of the food that you're purchasing. But at the same time, just as the caller mentioned, it doesn't necessarily, just because something is local doesn't necessarily mean that it was produced in a quality way. So you really do have to do the investigation, and it shouldn't be that way. The burden shouldn't be on the consumer to investigate the practices of the producer. It should be the job of the government or the independent certifying agency to do that investigation for them.
Peter Wariski, it seems to me, too, that the confusion comes in when, as a consumer, you're at the grocery store or at the farmer's market, and you see the let's say, the eggs, and it says free range. And like Craig from Palo Alto said, I picture them, you know, grazing on grass and walking around. So I think it's a question of terminology. Are they allowed to call it free range if they're not walking around, if they're just on a porch with a screen looking out at the range?
Currently, yes. And the big problem, they could solve this pretty easily. In fact, there's a rule that's been proposed for years now, or at least a year, that's just waiting to be approved. It's been held up in part by a couple of senators. It would, you know, make it very clear that you can't get away with porches. You have to let them outside. But it got held up and held up. The Obama administration put it out Inauguration Day or somewhere right around there. And the Trump administration has pulled back on it. So I don't see it becoming a rule. But there is a way for this problem to be fixed. It's just not going to get fixed for a while, I don't think.
Ah, the politics. Let's talk about that. The Food Safety Modernization Act was enacted under President Obama. And I remember there was just a huge scandal because who knew that there were these refrigerated trucks with food and produce in them, and there were these sort of weigh stations all over the country, and these trucks would drop off their load of food into these unrefrigerated, unsecured sort of Pony Express weigh stations waiting for the next truck to pick them up and transport them to the next location. The Food Safety Modernization Act was supposed to stop that, and under President Trump, that has now been shelved. The sunset labeling laws that said if there is a non-organic component of your organic product, that you have a certain amount of time to get that non-organic component out of your product, and now that's dead. Not to mention nutrition labeling. So Paige, are we kind of going backward here in terms of consumer protection as it relates to what consumers are told about what they're eating?
In a lot of ways, we are going backwards. Just to use sunset labeling as an example, when Congress passed the Organic Foods Production Act, it wrote in a limited exception for synthetic ingredients, and it allowed those limited ingredients to be in the organic foods for 5 years. And it made it so that after 5 years, they would sunset, they would be taken out. And in 2013, a rule was passed that would basically allow these synthetics to remain in organics indefinitely. And we actually challenged that rule in court, and we're currently litigating that because that wasn't the intent of Congress. The intent of Congress was that organic would be free of synthetics. And so when rules are passed to dismantle the organic program, we're going to challenge them. As far as the animal welfare rules that Peter mentioned, we've been working on those literally since 2000. The National Organic Standards Board, the independent stakeholder board that helps the National Organic Program run the organic program, has put out several recommendations on animal welfare. And finally, in 2016, we got a proposed rule, and it was finalized right before the Trump administration came into office. And this would allow the organic program to come in line with what consumers think organic already means. And now these rules are being delayed indefinitely. But this is what's necessary to protect the integrity of the organic program.
Peter, have you looked into the implications of rollbacks of some of these initiatives?
Well, in terms of the chickens, there is no rollback. It's just going to continue as is, which is to say the largest organic egg producers in the country will keep their birds inside, and there will be no minimum space requirements. And at the same time, there'll be a lot of small farmers who run their operations in a way that I think consumers would recognize as organic, and they're going to be operating at a competitive disadvantage to all these big guys who've decided that they can operate differently.
And the real scandal, too, is I think people are paying considerably more for food that they think is raised in a particular way because it's labeled organic, and Paige, they're not necessarily getting what they're paying for, right?
Well, that's true. People will go into the supermarket and they will see, you know, a certain brand of organic milk that'll be significantly cheaper than the other brands. And generally it's the store brand, it's the Costco brand or the Safeway brand. It's significantly cheaper. And that's because that milk is coming from these Aurora dairies. It's coming from these bad actors. What we recommend is that you actually purchase your products from producers that is labeled with the producer's name, so it has traceability, because those producers are responsible, and they want to keep the integrity of their product alive, and so that's what we recommend to consumers.
And what can concerned consumers do if they are concerned about the legitimacy of the whole idea of organic labeling? We're going to delve into that a bit more with attorney Paige Tomaselli of the Center for Food Safety and Peter Wariski of the Washington Post, who's done several articles that have unmasked some of the practices. And we invite your calls. If you're a concerned consumer, what can you do about the issue? We're going to get into that and your phone calls right after the break. ¶¶
This is Your Call on KLW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join in today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting the show. You can find out more information at yourcallradio.org, and there you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. And we love it when you have show ideas. You can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or give us a call at 866-798-8255. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Yale professor James Forman. We'll talk about his new book. It's called Locking Up Our Own: Crime and Punishment in Black America. The book looks at the role that African Americans themselves have played in advocating tough-on-crime measures that have led to mass incarceration. How were African Americans drawn into the whole idea that incarceration was the answer to crime? We hope you'll join us on the next Your Call. Today, we are talking about organics. There are problems with the organic food industry. The Department of Agriculture's organic standards are being strained by some food producers. One major one is that the federal government is allowing farmers to hire and pay for their own inspectors. Who knew? They get to self-certify in a way. So sometimes that USDA organic label on your food may not mean what you think it does. So give us a call with your questions, 866-798-8255. Let's go to Ali in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi. My question is about the enforcement of the labeling at the supermarket. Like, you go to a Whole Foods and the person who works behind the counter, what safeguard do we have if, let's say, accidentally he switched a breast of chicken who's organic versus the one that's not? How are we going to enforce that at the level of execution, which is, you know, like when it's, the product is put on the shelf, and how does the store monitor that? I take my comment off. Yeah, thank you.
Paige Tomaselli, please, if you can tackle that question.
Sure. It's not the job of I don't think it's the job of the supermarket to determine whether or not a specific producer has complied with the label that it's putting on its product. That's the job of the certifier. And as we mentioned earlier, there's inherent problems with the certification scheme under the National Organic Program and under USDA. But the supermarket should absolutely know the difference between what the labels mean. So if something says cage free or free range or organic or pasture raised, the supermarket should be able to tell you what that does mean, whether there's a federal standard for that, and what it doesn't mean. The supermarket shouldn't be complicit in misleading the consumer to think that something is, you know, it was raised outdoors when it actually wasn't.
Okay. Let's go to Ruby next in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I am wondering what the implications will be with the new administration's cutback in regulations. I'm really concerned about it because I love standards, and I expect to be protected by the government that we have to make sure that the food that we get is safe and that it is true to what it says. Do you know if there has been a cutback in the FDA budget with the proposed thing that's come down?
Peter Wariski, Washington Post editor, journalist, I should say. That's a very good question. Do we know whether the budget for oversight of the industry is being cut? And if so, what are the implications of that?
In terms of the National Organic Program, there was a proposed cut at one point. I don't think it's there anymore. Paige might know more, may have followed that more closely. But there is a push, you can tell as the next farm bill is being formulated, to cut the National Organic Program out from its organic roots, politically, so to speak, which is there's an advisory group called the National Organic Standards Board, and it's producers, farmers, there may be some retailers. Anyway, it's always been viewed as the roots of the organic movement, and they advise the USDA on how to determine what's organic and what's not. In fact, they were one of the groups that said, hey, a National Organic Program, we need a better rule for livestock. There's a little you can catch waves of it here in Washington where you can tell people are trying to cut the National Organic Standards Board out of the picture a bit so that the USDA, which is more wedded to conventional agriculture, can set the rules for their organic. That's, to me, probably the biggest threat to the organic program currently.
My understanding, too, is that the Organic Trade Association is forming their own task force to try and help ensure that imported organic products really are organic. Is that happening?
Yeah. They've been weighing in on that. They've been weighing in also on the organic poultry issues. It will be I haven't spoken to them since the hearing last week where it became pretty clear that there's going to be a move to cut this advisory board that has always been the organic roots, taken the organic roots perspective, been much purer than other entities in the industry would have been. I haven't spoken to them since that has been proposed, and it will be interesting going forward to see. It's really, to me, what happened last week sort of says, introduced to me the idea that maybe there's a battle for the very definition of organic, much bigger than anything we've seen before.
Paige, you've certainly worked on this issue enough to know, are we dealing with corruption here or incompetence when it comes to things filtering into the market that aren't really what they purport to be when it comes to organic standards?
I absolutely think we're dealing with corruption. I don't think it's incompetence. It's people who are intentionally violating the law to make more money. And it's the agency is ignoring the complaints of citizens, the complaints of local producers about the unfair competition that's happening in the organic program. So it is corruption. And to Peter's point, if the National Organic Standards Board is cut from organic, that would take the heart of the organic program away. The organic program would be nothing without the National Organic Standards Board. That is the independent stakeholder body that helps the USDA run the program, makes recommendations to the program, and it speaks for the consumers, the producers, the scientists, the environmentalists, for all of the stakeholders in organic. And so without the NOSB, the organic program just really wouldn't exist.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Hi, David in Berkeley. Thanks for joining us. Hi.
I just wanted to say that consumers use the organic as a standard of quality to compare to commercial, and if Cargill and Tyson and Foster Farms are setting the standard so that inspectors that are not friendly to the companies under inspection are eliminated and moved away from the circumspect client because they're becoming a nuisance, there really isn't a way of controlling this department of government if they let their guard down in all regards, because we remember the 2012 salmonella infection from a Texas distributor of cantaloupe who used an Arizona grower that used a California laboratory to inspect the cantaloupes. And it just seems that at the root of this department, if inspectors and employees are afraid of doing their job correctly, it's got to be done at the very base of this this government department.
Well, to the extent that politics enters into anything, things sort of get kind of wonky. And certainly there has been a real push. I think senators from Michigan and Kansas are both working to block the improved standards that the Senate Ag Committee have been trying to put forward. So, Peter, can you talk a bit about the politics?
Well, that's clearly constituent service, or seems to be, in that Senator Stabenow is the senator from Michigan, which is where the largest organic egg producers come from, and they don't let their birds out. That was the one that I wrote about that has the hens at three per square foot. And then Kansas has another very large egg operation, and Senator Roberts is the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. So they're both very influential. They're both on the Ag Committee, and they've both resisted this new rule, which, as Paige said, has been in the works for years. It was finalized in 2016, but it's still not in effect.
And you know what's really sad? It's that there really are small farmers that are trying to do the right thing and follow the rules, and some companies that are actually going even beyond some of the organic standards. Some of them that come to mind are Kashi's, Annie's, Clif Bar, so that it's not just how the animals or the produce is raised, but that it's not employing slave labor, that that it is sustainably farmed. So it almost seems to punish the small producers that are doing it the right way, right, Paige?
That's exactly it. So, you know, when you think about the number of organic producers, the vast majority of organic producers are doing it right, and they're doing it better than the National Organic Program insists that you do it. It's just these, you know, it's just these outliers, these large companies that really want to make money, and they don't care about improving the environment. They don't care about the integrity of organic. It's those companies that are giving organic a bad name. But the vast majority of these producers are doing it right. And so that's why, you know, we still have to believe in the organic label, because the people who founded the organic program and who believe in organic farming are still out there doing it right.
Okay, let's take another call. Denny in San Francisco, welcome.
Thanks, Renee. Great show today. I just wanted to remind people how pervasive this system in the United States is of self-regulation and monitoring. It's not only in organic, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, our Superfund Act, they all allow the polluter to pay a consultant to do the monitoring upon which regulatory decisions are then made. But I think that I want to applaud Peter and others who have taken on the role of citizen scientists, inspectors, community inspectors, who are willing to go out there and document the abuses that are going on. My organization, Community Science Institute, here in Richmond, you know, has gone to 29 countries to empower people to take their own citizen monitoring. And right now, And one of the answers to this is that there actually be real-time monitoring, not just some contractor working to give a company the result they want. But if you go to fenceline.org on the web right now, and you guys have posted this before, you can read the levels of benzene and toxics coming off the Chevron refinery in real time. So we need to go from where we are now with these poor inspectors who often get turned into whistleblowers and then even fired, to empowering the citizen scientists and going around the way the corporate guys are, you know, trying to get away with saying they're monitoring and everything's okay. So.
Thanks for your call, Denny. It's interesting. I do recall that there was legislation proposed to block undercover video from being taken at facilities. Can you talk about, Paige, what the status of that is?
Yeah, so there are what we call ag-gag laws that are proposed in various states, in Idaho and Utah, North Carolina, and we've been challenging those one by one in court. In fact, we just had a victory. We weren't plaintiffs in the lawsuit, but we filed a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, in the state of Utah, where the court found that the ag-gag law, the law that would make it illegal to go into a farm and take undercover investigations, was unconstitutional. The court in Idaho found the same, and we're currently under appeal at the Ninth Circuit. So there's this trend of states trying to protect the factory farms from the exposure that investigative journalists are trying to show, the true atrocities that are going on inside these facilities. But the courts have found that these laws are unconstitutional.
And Peter, I understand you've actually seen some changes in that dairy farm in Colorado since your reporting.
Yeah, I got a call the other day from one of the neighbors who I had spoken with while I was out there, and I'd asked him at that time, did you ever see the cows out? And he said, nah, maybe a couple hundred at the most. And they have 15,000 cows at this farm. And he called me last week and said that he sees the cows out all of a sudden.
Lo and behold, there are cows grazing. It's a good thing.
Yeah, 15,000 cows is not so easy to hide, but they were.
Wow, good work. Okay, let's go to Jim in Oakland. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you. I had a question about organic foods being imported from other countries. I understand that the majority of the soybeans that are used here come from China. Can you tell me if that's true, and is that a way to maybe avoid the regulation?
Peter, can you address that, the extent to which foods, particularly those labeled organic, may come from a source offshore?
Yeah. Most, I can't remember, it's at least half of corn and at least half of soybeans are imported currently. It didn't used to be the case. I'm talking about imports, organic imports there. I don't think they're coming from China. There was a time when a lot of the soybeans were coming from China. I think they're coming through Turkey now from places in Eastern Europe. But given the lack of regulation in the United States, which gets even worse when you're looking at imports because USDA doesn't do the actual inspection, so over there, and they have to rely on certifiers who may not speak English as well. I think it's pretty clear that the dangers of fraud are higher, at least from some countries.
You know,
sending us organic food.
I remember hearing when Smithfield got sold to a Chinese concern. I remember thinking to myself, to what extent, because a lot of, you know, their product is swine, and, you know, what is the oversight if it's sold, a huge concern like Smithfield is sold to China, to a Chinese concern. Is there reason for concern about that?
I would rather, that's not my bailiwick. Probably Paige would know more about
that. Paige, you want to take that one on?
Well, I think that there is cause for concern when U.S. companies are being sold internationally. They have different, you know, different standards than we do. But also, as farms become bigger and bigger, larger and larger, and they turn into factories, they're no longer farms. The American countryside is being sold as an international commodity, an international corporation. And so these companies are polluting in people's backyards. And so there is absolutely a concern when you have an international company that's operating in the U.S. countryside, because they don't have a concern for their neighbors. They're not thinking about the people down the street who are having health problems because of these operations.
You know, I thought it was interesting, too. It's been about a year, but I read where very often we have chickens that are raised in a particular way in the United States that are compliant with the organic standards, but then for processing, they are shipped to places like China, where they're then turned into nuggets or something else that's liable to turn up as a frozen food or perhaps in a fast food restaurant. and they're shipped back here, but we don't have any control over what happened to them during the processing over there. Somehow it's somehow cheaper to ship it all over there for processing. How's that possible?
Yeah, that I can't really speak to that except that it blows my mind as well, that it's actually cheaper to ship something to another country for processing and then have it shipped back here for us to eat it. Makes no sense to me.
And who knows what the process has been in the interim.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to William in Belvedere. Hi, William.
Yes, thank you very much. It's been my observation that the more things get centralized, the greater is the control by corporations. The things that have been cited that are taking place in the Senate from the agricultural states when it comes to national legislation have certainly pointed that out. Now, there are counties that, for instance, prohibit genetically modified foods to crops to be grown in their counties. And since there does seem to be greater public control, the closer to the public that the entity is, I would like to know the guest perspectives on local legislation to control such things as the amounts of pesticides, etc.
Paige Tomaselli, Center for Food Safety, can you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I absolutely think that local legislation is important and critical. The smaller the governmental entity, the more likely you're going to be able to have a significant influence on it. But the question really is, and it's different for each thing that you're talking about regulating, but the question is whether or not it's preempted by a state law or a federal law. So while some areas can be regulated at the local level, some are going to be preempted by state and federal laws.
And Peter, I'm wondering, is the whole discussion potentially undermining consumer confidence in general in the whole idea of organics?
I think so. I don't know how it couldn't. We've written some stories, a lot of interest from a lot of people, enough so that Congress is taking up some issues on the import, trying to crack down on the imports. And it's a shame because there's a lot of people that I've met, a lot of farmers that I've met who do, like Paige has made this point, that are operating according to the rules. And I would venture to guess that the majority of farmers are following the rules. Unfortunately, some of the ones that are breaking the rules or avoiding the rules or redefining outdoors in other simple terms are the largest ones. And it's very difficult for me to when I see the USDA organic label now, to know that what's being presented is what it's supposed to be.
So it lets me know that even the experts, people who've looked into this, are wondering, how do you shop, Paige? Do you go to the store? And what do you think when you see something labeled organic?
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny. I was just thinking how when my husband and I are in the supermarket together, he'll pick something up and I'll say, oh, no, we can't purchase that. And he'll be, but it's it. He'll say, but it says it's organic. And I'll say, yeah, but it comes from this farm and I know this about this farm. It's a blessing and a curse that I know so much about food because, you know, it allows me to make these choices really informed. But it also, it creates a debate in my mind about just about everything I pick up off the shelf. And so I think it takes a significant amount of research. It's unfortunate that you have to do that kind of research to determine what you want to purchase for yourself and your family, but you really do. You need to look at the label. You need to see where the product is coming from. You need to do a little bit of research. You need to go onto companies' websites and you need to talk to your farmer.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah, let's go to Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call and for this great discussion. I'd mainly like to know which companies, particularly food retailers, are lobbying to weaken the organic standards.
Peter, is there a rogues gallery of companies that are trying to undermine the standards?
Not that I know of. I mean, for the most part, when you go to these meetings and see people talking or lobbying and arguing for loosening of the standards, they tend to be, large farms or some large brands, but I don't actually, I don't know. Paige may know more about this, but I generally don't see the retailers getting their hands dirty in this.
Yeah, you know, specifically when we talk about the animal welfare standards, the ones that we've been talking about on this program, it's not the retailers. In fact, even the Organic Trade Association, which has many retailer members, they're behind the standards. We're talking about only 5 egg producers out of the 586 egg producers in this country. Those are the ones that are trying to hold up the standards. Everybody else, every other organic stakeholder is actually behind improving the standards.
I think we have time for one more quick caller. Resume in San Francisco. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm 68 years old. I've been eating natural food since I was 18. That's where I'm coming from. At this stage, back then, you went to farms to eat like that. At this point, the corporations run the system. The corporations need people to be sick to make money. The health insurance of corporations, the big pharma, depend on sickness. Organic food makes you healthy. Therefore, you are a liability to the corporation. But people have bought the idea of cheap food. Organic food is not cheap. Real food, you can grow in your backyard. You can grow in a pot on your porch.
Isn't that the truth? You know,
yes,
we were talking about that, that people...
Processed food is corporate food, and people have to stop their attachment if they want to be well to a processed food. Thank you.
Thanks, Resmé. And there was a time when people just had, even if it was just a little plot, their own garden. So, Paige Tomaselli, we have about a minute and a half left. So, do you have any final thoughts on this issue?
Yeah, I think my final thoughts are, we talked about how difficult it is to do research about, you know, what food you should purchase and what food you shouldn't purchase. I think one really easy way to get around that is to join a CSA, to just find one farmer and have them deliver a box of vegetables to you. Then it kind of takes out all the legwork. So.
And Peter Wariski, do you have any final thoughts to offer? Hi, Peter.
Oh, I guess not. I guess buyer beware would be the best. And I can only say I've been at this for a couple of years. And my skepticism only grows.
Caveat emptor. At the end of the day, thank you so much for being with us. From the Washington Post writer Peter Wariski and Paige Tomaselli, senior attorney with the Center for Food Safety. Thank you both for joining us. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in, as well as for your emails and phone calls. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you. Your call is produced at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Andrew Seltzer and Sanaa Saleem produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks again for listening. I'm Renee Kemp. This is Your Call.